with Darren Pritchett.
It's a lot. I hit the 7-iron like John Davis, the 3.
On Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
Goodbye, baby! At the 50, the 40, the 30, the 20, the 10. Bye-bye, rocket touchdown, Irish!
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest installment of Sports Beat AM on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. It is a cool 37 degrees in downtown South Bend at 6:06 on this Friday morning, October the 22nd, 2021. And we welcome you to our day before game day Sports Beat AM program. We are looking forward to the greatest intersectional rivalry in college football to resume after a year off last year. The 3-3 USC Trojans in South Bend tomorrow night at 7:30 to take on the 5-1 Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. We have the ball game for you right here on WSBT Radio, but the coverage starts at 2 o'clock with the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show. Vince and Tim will take care of that interview-based show. We'll talk X's and O's on Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Sean and I will have that program from Notre Dame Stadium, 4 o'clock until 6:30, kickoff at 7:30, and the official Notre Dame football postgame show after the game on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Notre Dame pretty much across the board, a 7-point favorite against USC. The Trojans are 2-0 on the road so far this year, but the wins against Washington State and Colorado, they have been miserable at home. Outside of beating San Jose State, they have lost 3 games at the Coliseum. Stanford, Oregon State, Utah, those teams scored 42, 45, and 42 points respectively. USC's defense has been very underachieving this year. RJ Abadia, who covers USC football, he'll be a part of the program at 8:05, offering his thoughts on this 3-3 USC football team. Their quality of play has not really changed that much since they fired Clay Helton after game 2 when USC lost to Stanford at the Coliseum. Dante Williams has taken over, and this USC team continues to be highly inconsistent. But you never know when these two teams get together, Notre Dame and USC, tomorrow night, 7:30 on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Sports Beat AM presents What You Missed While You Were Sleeping.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! Take it 76 yards!
Whoa!
On Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
We begin with injury news surrounding this Fighting Irish football team. According to Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly, quarterback Tyler Buckner banged up against Virginia Tech almost 2 weeks ago, had a good week this week, involved in practice, will have his role offensively in the game tomorrow against USC. Michael Mayer, top pass catcher in this Notre Dame football team, the sophomore tight end, missed the game against Virginia Tech. He is ready to roll near 100% for the matchup against the men of Troy. Running back Chris Tyree worked out a little bit yesterday. Coach Kelly says it's very unlikely that Tyree will be 100%, and he is trending toward a game-time decision. Coach Kelly mentioned, running straight ahead, he's fine, but trying to get out of a tackle or doing something possibly physically, pass protection, that's a bit of an issue right now for Tyree. So if Tyree can't go, who backs up Kyron Williams? One option is veteran running back Sebo Flemister. Now, he was not on the travel roster to Blacksburg for the Virginia Tech game, but Coach Kelly mentioned that he is available for the game against USC. But you also have to factor in freshman running back Logan Diggs, who impressed late in the Virginia Tech game. He might be an option for Coach Kelly and Coach Reese, backing up Kyren Williams if Tyree can't go. On the defensive side, defensive lineman Jacob Lacy limited in practice, and we'll see what he might be able to do on Saturday. Well, this Notre Dame-USC game, one of the great rivalries in college football, it is not a sellout. At Notre Dame Stadium, the Cincinnati game has been the only sellout so far this year. So Brian Kelly was asked what type of atmosphere he's expecting with Notre Dame and USC getting back together.
I don't run our ticketing office or marketing, you know. My job is to win football games and put ourselves in a position where we put a good product on the field. I think we do that. I have to hope that, you know, that people want to come out and see our football team play. And that's my job. The expectations would be that this is an incredible atmosphere playing USC, where we haven't played them at home in a while, and everybody's coming out. We're on break, right? And so our students traditionally come back for this game, and I would expect that. But I have a job to do, and that's to put a good product on the field. I think we have done that. The rest is up to, you know, what our fan base wants to do. I hope they want to come out and see this football team play, because it's a gritty, gutsy group of guys that, you know, just play really hard for four quarters. So I hope they come out and see them play.
A couple of years ago, the sellout streak ended, and we have seen a change in the largeness of crowds at Notre Dame Stadium. Now, are we in a situation with so many people coming from out of town, coming to South Bend to watch the Irish? Is the tail end of the pandemic affecting people's travel plans, not wanting to travel? Is that affecting the crowd size? Is it a situation where you finally reach that breaking point in the amount you can charge for tickets to a Notre Dame football game? Is it also the cost of getting a parking pass? Is it now just to the point where it's out of the reach of a good number of fans? Is the local community still interested in coming out to these games with those prices? Obviously, there are very smart people within Notre Dame marketing and promotions, the ticket office, to figure this out, but it is an interesting dilemma at this time. What is causing some of these bigger games not to sell out? Cincinnati brought a tremendous fan base to South Bend for their matchup with the Fighting Irish, but even two local teams, Notre Dame and Purdue, did not sell out at Notre Dame Stadium, and now USC does not sell out. I believe they have a special ticket package as they lowered prices for the North Carolina game. But it's going to be weird not to see a full house for Notre Dame, USC, barring something changing at the last second. And let's also say this, it is very easy, it is very nice to watch the football game from the comfort of your man cave. High definition TV has just made the games glow on television. So there are many reasons why it's just a whole lot easier to stay home and watch the game rather than dealing with the traffic and the hassle of a game, although there's just nothing like the experience, though, going to a football game in person. National Football League, the Chicago Bears continue to prep for the road game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Sunday afternoon at 4:25. Last couple of games, Justin Fields' completion percentage has increased significantly. What's the next step for the rookie quarterback out of Ohio State? Here's Bears head coach Matt Nagy.
Well, just, you know, again, for all of us, and we'll continue to always have this conversation, is I think the biggest thing for him is making sure that the stuff that he's doing well, he continues to keep getting better at. And what that is, you know, for us, we know what that is without getting into a whole bunch of scheme. And then you know, we talked about it the other day, like situationally, I think has been good for him and for us to talk through and discuss. Like when you're in situations within the game, there's a lot of situations that go on. And so just him now kind of thinking like we think as coaches will help him so that when he's out there on the field, whatever it is, he thinks like us. And I think that he's done a great job of getting better and better each day. I mean, he's done it in practice, and now he's getting this game experience to elevate that.
Fields and the Bears down in Tampa Sunday at 4:25 on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, your home of the Chicago Bears. Chicago 3-3, coming off a loss to the Green Bay Packers at Soldier Field. Buccaneers extra rest. They played last Thursday and beat Philadelphia on the road 28-22. Tom Brady and the Bucs are 5-1 and the leaders of the NFC South. We now move to hockey. The 12th-ranked Fighting Irish hockey team had a rare Thursday night game against RIT at the Compton Family Ice Arena. Very sloppy first period. Defensive zone miscues ended up in the back of the net, and RIT grabbed a 2-0 lead on the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame on the comeback trail in the second period.
So we're back to even strength. 4:45 to go in the second. Karasek lofts the puck to center. Through Ralston. Picked up left side. Here comes Grant Seigert. Left wing, he shoots, he scores! The South Bend native, Graham Slaggart, finally puts the Irish on the board. They're back to within 2-1 with 4:38 to go in the second.
Graham Slaggart's first of the year. Good outlet by Karasek. Just lobbed it to center. Ralston got it. Flipped it over to Graham Slaggart, who put it in the upper right corner of the net. And the Irish were down 2-1 to RIT. It was still 2-1 in the third period, and the Irish were on the power play.
Right point, Graham Slaggart. They set up the 4-on-3. Lieberman in the middle. Left side, Ralston, one-timer. Blocked by a diving Willett. Slow to get up is Willett. Meanwhile, his teammate, Caverly, clears. Willett cannot get up. It's a 4-on-2 right now. Lieberman, left circle, holds, shoots. He scores! He shot it by Willett, who was injured. Nick Lieberman, the defenseman, scores from near the left dot. And Notre Dame has erased a 2-goal deficit. Their second power play goal of the year ties this game at 2 with 10:46 to go in period number 3.
Terrific goal by Lieberman, taking advantage of the injured RIT defenseman. The game would head into overtime, and it looked like on the first shift Notre Dame was going to win it. A terrific pass to senior Cam Burke at the bottom of the right circle, took the quick shot, and the goaltender for RIT, Colby Matthews, briskly moved from his right to left and made a diving pad save to prevent a Notre Dame game winner. And unfortunately, RIT went the other way and scored the game winner on a 2-on-1. And RIT beats Notre Dame 3-2 to hand the Irish their first loss of the year. The 12th-ranked Fighting Irish are now 3-1. It is RIT at Notre Dame once again tonight, 7:30 opening faceoff at the Compton Family Ice Arena. We've got pregame coverage on the Notre Dame Radio Network starting at 7:15. You can hear Irish hockey in the South Bend market on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. To the Chicago Blackhawks, looking for their first win of the year, looking for their first lead of the year. They were down 1-0 to Vancouver in the first period, but the Blackhawks were on the power play.
Taves looking to the middle, Jabrinka, and he scored! Patrick Kane set up Alex Jabrinka, bang! The power play goal ties the game.
Pat, think about it. You had the shot from Kane. You had the shot from Jones in the middle of the ice, and then now you have the pass. From Kane to the Cat, and he just buries it top shelf. What a pass, what a shot.
A lot of options on that Hawks power play, some good weapons. They tied it up at 1, but Vancouver would close out the game, scoring the final 3 goals, and the Hawks still have not led in any of their 5 games. Vancouver beat the Hawks 4-1. Pat Foley and Eddie Olczyk on the call on NBC Sports Chicago. To the National League Championship Series, Dodgers and Braves. Atlanta looking to close out the Dodgers in Chavez Ravine. Early on in the ball game, Chris Taylor made an impact, and he continued to impact this contest throughout. This audio courtesy of TBS, Brian Anderson and Ron Darling on the call.
Chris Taylor now, 2-1 game. And Taylor, way back. The Dodgers are in front in the second inning. Dodger lead, Taylor in the air to center field. That ball's on the barrel. That ball is deep, and she is gone! Chris Taylor, a two-run home run! 6-2 Dodgers! And game five is Chris Taylor's game.
You just got to make a better pitch, 0-2. You can't make that mistake in these kinds of games.
2-2. That's deep left center. Chris Taylor. Not one, not two, but three. Chris Taylor. The night of his life. 7-2 Dodgers. Home run number three for Taylor.
And Taylor would get a couple of hugs at home plate from teammate Albert Pujols, who had a three-home run game in the 2011 World Series for St. Louis against Texas in Arlington. Taylor, three home runs, helping the Dodgers to beat the Braves 11-2, sending the series back to Atlanta for Game 6. Braves still lead the series 3-2. The Astros can close out the Red Sox in the America League Championship Series tonight down in Houston. Those are some of the things you might have missed while you were sleeping. It is 6:22. I'm Darren Pritchett. This is Sports Beat AM. We'll talk sports wagering coming up in a moment on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Show me the money.
We go with Sizzler. We go with Sizzler.
Sports Beat AM continues with We Go Into Sizzler, our sports wagering segment on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Each morning, we recap my previous day's three selections and then come up with three new picks for the current day. Yesterday, This week, we're 50-50. Here's what happened last night. Our first wager went very, very well. As a Bronco fan, I've seen enough of this offense. I probably could have been more aggressive on this wager, but in the matchup against the Cleveland Browns at the Dog Pound last night, Thursday Night Football on WSBT Radio, I took the Broncos under 21.5 points at minus 150. Knowing this Denver offense, that's a lock. They scored a whopping 14 points in a 17-14 loss to an injury-depleted Cleveland football team. So I should have just stopped right there. Maybe instead of three wagers, just make one big one, because that was going to be easy, and it was. Well, I put a lot of faith in the Blackhawks. I mean, they had not even led the first four games. One would say, well, how can you bet in favor of Chicago knowing that stat? But I felt like it was time for the worm to turn, taking on a Vancouver team, I would say fairly equal in execution level at this point of the season. Hawks on home ice, Vancouver in the midst of a road trip. I thought this was a good spot for the Hawks. So there is a three-way wager on BetMGM. You can take the Hawks to win in regulation, the Canucks to win in regulation, or the game tied at the end of regulation. I went with the Hawks to win, and unfortunately, they still have not led in a game. Probably not my wisest decision to think, oh, it's all going to turn around. Everything evens out. Like Seinfeld told us, you lose $20, you find $20 in an old jacket. It always balances out. Well, it has not balanced out yet for the Hawks, who lost to Vancouver 4-1. Finally, Last year, the Dodgers, down 3-1 in the NLCS against the Braves, rallied to win the last three to go to the World Series. It can happen again, right? Braves up 3-1. And here I went again with the starting pitcher over the opener. I just haven't bought into the opener yet. I'm slow to that fact. And for the second consecutive night, the opener beat the starter. And I took the Braves on the money line at plus 110. They were the underdog, and they should have been the underdog. They got clubbed by Chris Taylor. 3 home runs for Taylor. Dodgers win 11-2. So 1-2 last night, 6-6 so far this week. And for the year, we're 20 games over 500, 111, 91-4. But we've been kind of in a rut in the month of October. Let's see if we can start something good on today's program. Now, I have to admit, I have been lousy the last couple of Fridays trying to pick these Notre Dame games. Let's give it a shot again. Notre Dame USC at the Coliseum tomorrow, 7:30, right here on WSBT Radio. Notre Dame favored by 7, according to my partners at BetMGM. I'm going to have a final score prediction later on this hour, and I've got Notre Dame winning slightly more than that 7-point spread. Not a fan of laying that many points considering how inconsistent this Irish team is, but I'm going to be a believer in that offense against the USC defense tomorrow. I'll take Notre Dame minus 7 and hold my breath. I'm going to take Notre Dame over 33.5 points against USC at minus 105. My number is slightly over, not by a wide margin. And finally, I'm going to say that the two teams will combine for over 58 points, and I get that wager at minus 110. I got to be honest, I don't feel good about any of these three, but on the Friday before the Irish game, I picked 3 Notre Dame wagers. This is one I might just stay away from. Too unpredictable, but I'll take Notre Dame minus 7, Notre Dame over 33.5 points, and the two teams will combine for over 58 points. All those stat lines and wagers courtesy of BetMGM, BetMGM.com. 27 minutes in front of the top of the hour. John Hoffman standing by with a SportsCenter update, then an Irish preview with Sean Stiers.
Welcome to Sports Beat AM with Darren Pritchett on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Back in even strength, 4:45 to go on the second. Karasek lofts the puck to center, through Ralston, picked up left side. Here comes Graham Slager, left wing, he shoots, he scores! The South Bend native, Graham Slager, finally puts the Irish on the board. They're back to within 2-1 with 4:38 to go on the second.
Well, that was one of the highlights from last night's Notre Dame hockey game at home against RIT, a rare Thursday night game. The Irish playing on Thursday and Friday due to the Irish football team being at home Saturday night taking on USC. RIT, a 2-1-1 hockey team coming to South Bend. Their most recent game, they beat St. Lawrence 2-1, but they put together a solid performance last night and handed the 12th-ranked Fighting Irish their first loss of the year. It was a 3-2 Tiger victory in overtime. I know this is something that Coach Jackson has talked about through the years and calling these games for over a decade now. It sure seems to play out. But this Notre Dame hockey team, on a night in which the students are in class earlier in the day, the first period just always seems to be sluggish. Now, when the Irish go on the road, it's more of a business trip. You get up in the morning, you come down for breakfast, you loosen up a little bit, you go to the arena, you work out, you come back to the hotel. Normally, you take a nap, you get ready for the bus trip to the arena for that nighttime start. So it is a different mentality at home. You're getting up in the morning, you're going to class, you're doing what you need to do books-wise, and then you have to lock in on the game. And we see it so many times. Normally, a series starts on Friday. The Irish are slow coming out of the gate for whatever reason, and that was the case last night. They were a little sloppy in their defensive zone, and two turnovers in their own zone resulted in goals for RIT. Some nights the turnovers don't cost you. This was one of those nights that RIT buried a couple of opportunities. Will Calverley, their leading goal scorer, picked up his fourth of the year at 13-12. And then after a failed clearing attempt by Notre Dame, Kobe Walker was allowed to skate behind the net, come out the far side, still untouched, had his opportunity to get into a pretty good scoring spot about 5 feet from the goal and roofed it over the top of goaltender Ryan Bischel's glove for Walker's first of the year, and it was 2-0 RIT after the first. That was just a breakdown defensively. First, there was the turnover, the failed clearing attempt, and then the wraparound chance where no one was in the vicinity of Walker, and just like that, it was 2-0 RIT. Notre Dame got going in the second period. Graham Slaggart, the South Bend native, scored his first of the year. That was the highlight you heard just a second ago at 15:22 of the second. Notre Dame would tie it in the third on the power play, taking advantage of an injured RIT defenseman who had just blocked a shot. Nick Lieberman from the left circle, a wrist shot beating the goaltender's short side, his second of the year. And the native of Minnesota tied the game at two at the 9:14 mark of the third period. The game would go into overtime. It looked like Notre Dame was going to win it. Cam Burke, all by himself in front, took a quick one-timer and a right-to-left diving pad save by the goaltender, Colby Matthews. Kept the game tied at two. RIT got the puck, went the other way, and scored the game winner. It was Carter Wilkie with his second of the year. Disappointing loss for the Irish. They lose to one of those older veteran teams. Everybody on the ice for RIT was Canadian except for three Americans. So this is one of those hard-nosed teams, physical, tough to play. And the Irish got off to a slow start, and it cost them last night, losing to RIT 3-2 despite outshooting the Tigers 34-19 in the hockey game. Notre Dame's penalty kill continues to be perfect. They were 3-of-3 last night, 20-of-20 through four games. The power play entered last night 1-for-11. They went 1-for-3 last night, but only one shot in those three power play opportunities. It was a good one, though, by Nick Lieberman. The Irish dominated the faceoff circle. That's normally a big stat in a hockey game, getting control of the puck. Notre Dame won 33 faceoffs, RIT 21. So it's time to regroup. A chance to split this home non-conference series with RIT tonight. 7:30 faceoff at the Compton Family Ice Arena, 7:15 pregame on the Notre Dame Radio Network, heard right here in South Bend on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. For Thursday night, only had 2,200 in the building. Should be a bigger crowd since a lot of football fans are in town, and normally they like to pick up a Notre Dame hockey game while they're in town. So we're expecting a much larger crowd tonight for RIT and Notre Dame again on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, 7:15 pregame, 7:30 opening faceoff. 6:48 at WSBT. I'll offer five guarantees for Notre Dame USC next on WSBT. When 6:53, Sports Beat AM rolls on. On your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Being streamed live at WSBTRadio.com and the WSBT Radio app. This is the My Five Question of the Day, one question with five answers. Today, I will attempt, and the key word is attempt, to guarantee five facts about tomorrow's Notre Dame-USC game. My version of bold predictions if you watch NFL Game Day on the NFL Network. Theirs are much more entertaining. Plus, Mariucci picks on Warner all the time. I don't have anyone to pick on. I'd have to pick on myself. All right, here we go. We'll start with guarantee.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
Well, I believe this is going to be a really good day for the Irish offense. USC's defense is just breaking down too often. Going to be cold at Notre Dame Stadium. How interested are they going to be in getting physical with the Irish. And I hope that the Irish offensive line and the running game, the steps we saw against Virginia Tech, were not a mirage, and I don't think it was. I think it was steps forward. Not a Jolly Green Giant huge step, but a step. But I believe Notre Dame will score 5 touchdowns in this game. I've got 2 passing and 3 on the ground.
4!
Guarantee number 4, that Notre Dame will rush for over 150 yards for a second straight game. Against Virginia Tech, 42 carries, 180 yards, 4.2 yards per carry. USC in the bottom third in the country in run defense. Alt and Kristofic, maybe they've added a little juice to the offensive line. Chris Tyree may not play. Logan Diggs, Sebo Flemister could play a bigger role in this game behind Kyron Williams, but I like the Irish to get over 150 in the rushing total once again.
Okay. Number 3.
Guarantee number 3 is not much of a stretch, but Michael Mayer, the sophomore tight end, returns to the Notre Dame lineup after missing the Virginia Tech game. Let's go right back to work with Mr. Mayer. I'm going to guarantee that he'll lead the Irish in catches, and he will lead the football team in receiving yards.
Number 2.
Well, Drake London has been dominating the competition, the USC 6'5 junior wide receiver. 6 games played, 4 times over 10 catches. A 5th game, he had 9 catches. And then there's Stanford. The Cardinal had the secret sauce. London had just 4 catches in that particular game. Well, I'm going to say that London will be held under 10 catches by the Fighting Irish. That would be just the 3rd time in 7 games this year that has occurred. Look back to 2 years ago. Notre Dame shut down Michael Pittman, who was having a big year. They were not going to let Pittman beat them. Same could be the storyline tomorrow with London. I'll say he's under 10 catches against the Irish.
Number 1.
Well, I'll attempt to guarantee a final score prediction. The spread is 7. I've got the Irish covering. Final score prediction, Notre Dame 35, USC 24. That would mean Notre Dame covers the spread and slightly over the point total of 58 points. Those are my attempt to guarantee 5 things about tomorrow's game, Notre Dame and USC, a 7:30 kickoff on WSBT Radio. 1 hour in the books, the 6 a.m. hour, brought to you by Fisher's Barbecue and Catering. East McKinley Avenue in Mishawaka. The drive-thru is open Tuesday through Saturday. Just look for the smoke. Midland Engineering Company, completing their first century of quality roofing experience. And Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza for both dine-in and carry-out.
Welcome to Sports Beat AM.
I'm catching on the hosel, right?
Yeah, right.
Moving my head.
Yeah.
Clearing too early. I'm clearing too late. My sling feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
It's the 7:05 tee time.
The crowd is just on its feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess.
4. Please, Darren Pritchett is now broadcasting.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Welcome to Sports Beat AM on Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
Better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Good morning, everyone. Hour number 2, Sports Beat AM on WSBT Radio, streaming live at WSBTRadio.com and on the WSBT Radio app. 7:08 is your time. Your current temperature in downtown South Bend. Listen up, SoCal. It is 36 degrees on this Friday morning, October the 22nd of 2021. Greatly appreciate you joining me live here on WSBT Radio. Maybe you're listening to this on what they would say back in the day on tape delay, on a podcast on WSBTRadio.com. The podcast also available on our Facebook page, Sports Radio 960 WSBT, and of course also on the SportsMeet app. If you don't have the app, first off, it's free, and you can get that download at the iTunes or Google Play Store. Just search WSBT Radio, and with the WSBT Radio app, you can listen to our programming live, and as I mentioned, the podcasts are available as well. And if you want a mix of WSBT Radio and live Notre Dame football play-by-play, there is an app also for you. Odyssey. It's the old radio.com app, AUDACY. With that app, you can listen to us live and also the Notre Dame USC game tomorrow live. The radio call with Paul Burmeister and Ryan Harris on the Notre Dame Radio Network. It is 7:09 on this Friday morning. It is the day before game day, SportsBeat AM program. The 7 o'clock hour is going to be brought to you by Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, East McKinley Avenue in Mishawaka. The drive-thru is open Tuesday through Saturday. Just look for the smoke. By Midland Engineering Company, completing their first century of quality roofing experience. And by Mimo's Pizza on Edison in Mishawaka, the best pizza in the state, Manja Manja. Let's give you a quick recap of where we stand right now at the Notre Dame quarterback position. The grad transfer from Wisconsin, Jack Cohn, has started each of the first six games for Notre Dame. We fully expect Cohn to be the guy again tomorrow as the Irish take on the USC Trojans. This was Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly earlier in the week analyzing his quarterback room.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from a quarterback standpoint, you know, Jack Cohn continues to be the guy that we feel like gives us the best chance to win, and mixture of him with Tyler Buchner. You know, I think both of them. Drew has done some really good things for us, and if we feel like we're in a situation where we need to call on him, we would. But I think right now, as we look at it, it's probably in my mind, and I know in Tommy's, that Jack would start, and we'll continue to get Tyler more playing time.
Tyler Buchner was a little banged up against Virginia Tech. Brian Kelly says that Buchner is good to go. He's been practicing this week, and he will have his place once again in the Irish offense, coming off the bench at some point, hopefully just to run his package. Hopefully it is not, like we have seen the last few weeks, a quarterback change to try to get something going offensively. For Cohn, he had the big game against Florida State in week one. He played the entire game and had an explosive evening down in Tallahassee. Since then, every game has featured at least one other quarterback in the game. Buchner has had his place in the offense when healthy. Drew Pine has come in relief and has done some really good things, but right now Pine is not one of the top two options for Brian Kelly and Tommy Rees. It's going to be Jack Cohn starting, and then at some point, Tyler Buchner comes in the ballgame. I still believe Jack Cohn, as of today, is the best quarterback on the roster. We're not talking upside. I'm not talking ceiling. I'm saying today or tomorrow against USC, Jack Cohn is the best quarterback. Now, the Irish will try to get more efficient play out of Cohn. The Irish have been very quiet in first quarters. Brian Kelly offered a reason why earlier this week. Now, he did say ineffective play is one reason, but also with several of the teams coming off a bye, they tweak what they do, and the Irish have to then adjust to what defenses are doing to them. But the Irish need better production in the first quarter. Now, they love to get the production from Jack Cohn that they got late in the ball game at Virginia Tech 2 weeks ago, when he led the Irish to the final 11 points of the ball game, and Notre Dame got out of Dodge with a 32-29 victory over Virginia Tech. So how do you get that Jack Cohn late game play in the first quarter?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, let's look at it from this perspective, right? When has he looked really good late in the game, right? You know, those defensive linemen are chasing Tyler Buchner around, right? they're tiring out a little bit. So that pass rush is not quite the same in the first series or the second series as it is in that last series. So, you know, there's a little bit of that. Jack speeds up a little bit in those late drives where the ball comes out a little bit quicker. There's more of a sense of urgency. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think the pass rush tends to lay down a little bit later in the game as those guys are running sideline to sideline, having to chase all game. And then I think Jack's sense of urgency in terms of getting the ball out is a lot more deliberate. So I think we gleaned a lot from that in our bye week in terms of what we needed to work on maybe earlier in the game for, you know, Jack and being more efficient.
Well, the good news is USC's defense right now very poor against the pass. Overall, they have been very ineffective. The one stat that stood out, red zone defense, they're 26th in the country. Opponents have gotten inside the USC 20 23 times this year. Six times USC has forced the opposition to walk away with no points. But here's the catch. Here's the asterisk. The 17 scores by the opposition, 17 touchdowns, no field goals. Notre Dame tied for 57th in the country right now in red zone efficiency. They're 13 out of 15. 10 of the 13 scores have been touchdowns. There could be a difference-making portion of the ball game, as if Notre Dame can get into the end zone, when they get down to the red zone, this is going to be a very good evening for this Fighting Irish football team. 7:15, Sports Beat AM continues on WSBT Radio. You got a situation where Notre Dame is game planning, two quarterbacks in mind to play. Both have different traits. Significantly different. Cohn, that classic pocket passer. Tyler Buchner, that new wave quarterback who, man, he accelerates. He runs hard, physical, has a great throwing arm, made a couple of mistakes throwing the ball against Virginia Tech. One was taken back to the house for 6 points, but tremendous upside for Tyler Buchner. Here's Brian Kelly on developing different quarterbacks with different styles of play.
That's a good question, and you have to pick your spots during practice in terms of when you are, you know, trying to isolate your particular work for that player. You know, we have another guy named Brendan Clark that we're trying to get ready too. I'll give you an example. Most of our 7-on-7 reps against our defense during the bye week we gave to Brendan Clark because we're trying to get the rust off of him and get him back. And so I think you pick your spots during practice to give them the dedicated work necessary to see their growth continue to happen. And it's something that Tom and I sit down and meet and talk about and have discussions about to make sure that it's not stalling the overall operation, but making sure that the individual continues to grow.
Well, the follow-up to those comments, Brendan Clark later in the week announced on social media he is heading to the transfer portal, so Clark is out of the equation. And coming up in our next segment, very interesting how Brian Kelly altered things this week. He just mentioned Clark involved with the scout team. So what did he do with the scout team once Clark left the program? And very interesting to hear what they decided to do. We'll have that for you coming up in our next segment here on WSBT Radio. It is 7:18. USC might in fact use two quarterbacks on Saturday. You know about Keaton Slovis, but do you know about Jackson Dart? We'll talk about that and more coming up in a couple of moments. Also, who's the number two running back for the Irish if Chris Tyree can't go? We'll try to come up with some answers next. It is 7:18 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Welcome to Sports Beat AM.
And finds Kyron Williams at the 10, inside the 5, dives for the pylon, touchdown Notre Dame. Throws into the end zone, just across the goal line, touchdown Notre Dame, Avery Davis.
With Darren Pritchett on Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
I hope your Friday morning is off to a great start, and thank you for stopping by Sports Beat AM on WSBT Radio, WSBTRadio.com, and the WSBT Radio app. Brought to you this hour by Mimo's Pizza, Midland Engineering Company, and Fisher's Barbecue and Catering. Darren Pritchett with you. Your time is 7:23, 36 degrees on this Friday morning. Well, we've been documenting the Irish planning to use two quarterbacks once again this week against USC. Jack Cohn will start, then Tyler Buchner will come in at some point. USC has Keaton Slovis, a very familiar name for Irish fans. Notre Dame has faced him. And Slovis is a career 68% thrower of the football, down to 64% this year, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions against Washington State, injured very early on in the ball game. Freshman Jackson Dart, Jackson spelled J-A-X-S-O-N, entered the ball game. And wow, what a debut. 391 passing yards and 4 touchdowns, and part of that done playing on an injured knee, which would cost him the next few weeks of action. Well, there's a report that Dart has been cleared by doctors and he might be available for USC tomorrow against the Fighting Irish. So the possibility of Slovis and Dart playing at quarterback for USC, what does that mean for planning for the Notre Dame defense? Brian Kelly addressed Jackson Dart yesterday during his media session.
Yeah, you know, he very talented quarterback as well. You know, we watched his film and, you know, live arm, you know, Slovis, obviously, we believe is going to be the starter. If they get into any kind of, you know, situation where, you know, they don't feel like the offense is moving, you know, he certainly can go in there. You know, he's just probably a little bit more dynamic on the edge, can get out and run and move around. But they're both outstanding quarterbacks. I don't know that there'd be that much of a difference in terms of our preparation other than, you know, he's a guy that certainly can pull the ball down and be much more effective, you know, in scrambling situations.
Yeah, has much more wiggle than Keaton Slovis, who sits in that pocket and fires the football. Does an interim head coach make a different decision on quarterback play compared to a head coach trying to build for the future? It's a great question. Not sure how Dante Williams handles this, but there is the report that Jackson Dart, who had that big game in Pullman, would be available for USC tomorrow. So both teams might play multiple quarterbacks in the matchup. For the Fighting Irish, Kyron Williams ready to go at running back. He's the starter. Chris Tyree is the backup. He was injured in Blacksburg and right now not at 100%, according to Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. Worked out a little bit on Wednesday, not likely 100%. Brian says Tyree will be a game-time decision. So if Tyree can't go, who's number two? Veteran Sebo Flemister did not make the trip to Blacksburg, was kept back in South Bend for whatever reason. He is available tomorrow. But then you've got freshman Logan Diggs, who was a key part of those closing minutes of the ball game as the Irish rallied from 8 down to beat Virginia Tech. So you've got the veteran Flemister, you got the young guy in Diggs. Does Brian Kelly have a preference who the number two running back is tomorrow if Tyree can't go?
Right now, I would tell you that we have confidence in both Diggs and Sebo if Chris isn't able to go at a high level. Chris could go right now, but I don't know that he's at the level that we want to put him in the game yet. And so we need today, Thursday, and Friday. And my guess is that's going to be a game time decision. Lance is going to have to take a good look at him and talk to Chris and see, you know, if he feels like he can do everything. A lot of this is with the running back. It's when you're pushing on somebody. It's when you're trying to break a tackle. He looks really good running straight, and he can make his cuts. It's when you're in the hole. It's when you're blocking. It's those things. So we're not going to know on him, but we do feel really confident with the other two kids. And I wouldn't, Eric, I wouldn't get too worked up on whether it's 2-3. I would really say it's really 2A, 2B with those kids right now.
Brennan Clark entered the transfer portal earlier this week, the number 4 quarterback on the football team. And Brian on Monday had mentioned he was working as the scout team quarterback in 7-on-7 situations to help the Irish defense get ready for the USC offense. But Clark has now entered the transfer portal. He's left the program. So how did Brian Kelly adjust on the fly without Clark on the field helping to prepare the defense by being the scout team quarterback? And very interesting to hear what the Irish decided to do as the scout team quarterback position was open.
You know, obviously losing Brendan, you know, forced us to, you know, have a scout team situation, a demonstration situation where, you know, we wanted to continue to have a really competitive situation. So we did a little bit more this week against our defense. We call it pick and period, where we pick some plays that we have in our offense that are similar to USC, and we run them as our offense, kind of high school related, I guess, in a sense. And we wanted to give them some real good looks. So we picked up a little bit of that in terms of ones versus ones going against each other. And we would mimic some of USC's plays. And then we rotated Buckner and Pine went down for a couple of periods when we weren't in team time. And gave those guys a look down there because that's what we needed to do. So we managed it within. Those guys were great, and we helped our defense as well.
Piecing it together on the fly, interesting to hear how the Irish handled not having the scout team quarterback for the full week. 7:30 is your time. This is Sports Beat AM being brought to you by Mimo's Pizza, Midland Engineering Company, and Fisher's Barbecue and Catering. We'll talk some Notre Dame football recruiting with Blue and Gold Illustrated's Mike Singer coming up in a couple of moments. But straight ahead, a Sports Center update with John Hoffman, Irish preview with Sean Stiers, all on Sports Beat AM. On Sports Radio 960 WSBT, your time is 7:31.
Welcome to Sports Beat AM with Darren Pritchett on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
-36 degrees at 7:39. Welcome back to Sports Beat AM. Darren Pritchett with you. Great to have you on board. 1 hour from right now, we'll talk Notre Dame USC with Patrick Engel. He covers Notre Dame football for Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Also coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, AJ Abadia, who covers USC football, offers his perspective on what to expect from this 3-3 USC football team coming to South Bend. Looking forward to hearing AJ's thoughts on this USC squad that has an interim head coach, a lot of talent across the board, a dynamic wide receiver, a veteran quarterback, and what he describes as an underachieving USC defense. All of that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
This is the Blue and Gold Illustrated Recruiting Update with Mike Singer.
Always great to be joined by Mike to talk Notre Dame football recruiting. This is a fun recruiting weekend. Always Kind of a recruiting palooza in South Bend when the USC Trojans come to town. The Irish take on USC Saturday at 7:30 right here on WSBT Radio. But, Mike, let's start with this Irish coaching staff. They had some time off away from this Irish football team last week during the bye. How much did this coaching staff take advantage of the opportunity to go out and maybe focus on recruiting a little more?
They definitely took advantage of it, Darren. Brian Polian hit the road on Tuesday. I mean, he was all over the country, coast to coast. You know, the rest of the coaching staff hit the road on Wednesday. I believe, you know, the Notre Dame, he was allowed to go out on Tuesday. The special teams units don't do, you know, anything on Tuesday. So he was able to go early a day before on the bye week. I mean, he was on the road in Utah and California and came back in Indiana. I mean, Lance Taylor, running backs coach, Florida, Georgia, Texas, three pretty good states for high school football. Dell Alexander went and saw his three receiver commitments in the 2022 class. I should say, just to clarify, this isn't the time of the year where the coaches are able to go and do an in-home visit and sit down and have a home-cooked meal with the recruit families. This is just the period where they're getting an evaluation. They're seeing a practice. They're seeing the game on Friday. They're just stopping in the school and talking to the high school coach. They're not able to sit down and have that deep conversation with the recruit. This was just the evaluation period that we're in right now. That, you know, even Notre Dame, when they played Florida State, you know, that was a Sunday night game. So Notre Dame was able to go out on the road on Friday. So that's kind of where we're at right now in the recruiting process for these, you know, coaches on the road. So not a crazy amount to kind of take away from it, Darren. But the biggest thing for me is, who did the staff go see? We've been reporting on this a lot at blueandgold.com. Staff definitely wanted to see their top targets in both the 2022 and 2023 classes.
Mike Singer, recruiting insider, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, joining us on WSBT Radio. Follow him on Twitter. His handle is @rivals_Singer. So now we transition to USC week, and Mike, the coach is coming off the road, now preparing for USC, and now they're also going to be handling recruits coming to this Notre Dame campus. I would have to imagine this probably has to be one of the busiest weeks of the season for this Notre Dame football coaching staff, balancing game week and also having all these recruits coming to town for the USC game.
It's ridiculous, Darren. This visitor list for Notre Dame is just ridiculous. I've got my list pulled up. It looks like about 30 prospects I've already confirmed, and about 90% of them already hold offers from Notre Dame. Handful of them commits for the Irish. Few of them coming in on official visits as well. Joshua Burnham and Nolan Ziegler, four-star linebacker pledges for the Irish from the state of Michigan. They're coming in for their official visit. They are the only Notre Dame commits, to my knowledge, who haven't taken their official yet. So Notre Dame wanted them to save it for the USC game, and they'll certainly be recruiting for Notre Dame. Other two official visitors that I've confirmed so far: Hiro Kanu, a top 100 defensive line prospect from Southern California. He's actually an international prospect from Europe. He's been playing ball at a high level in Southern California for a few years now. And Carson Tabarachi, an athlete recruit from Park City, Utah. Brian Polian, I mentioned, was in the state of Utah just this past Tuesday. Tabarachi School's one stop that Polian made. He is about 6'2", 230 pounds. I mean, we could talk a while about what position he would play at Notre Dame, because I don't quite know, and I don't think Notre Dame knows at this point. H-back, tight end, running back, linebacker, I mean, special teams. This kid is versatile, could do a lot of different things. Notre Dame saw him at camp over the summer, loved him. This kid's been balling out as a senior this fall, and Notre Dame went ahead and offered him a few weeks ago. So just a long, ridiculous list, Darren. We could spend so much time diving into it. I know we don't have time for that today, but And the thing is, Darren, this visitor list is going to just keep growing, and we're going to find out about new big names that are coming in this weekend. It's going to be quite the recruiting event for Notre Dame.
Just a side question. You mentioned 30 on your list. I sent you a tweet, I think it was last Saturday, listening to the broadcast of the Texas-Oklahoma game. That was 2 weeks ago. And they mentioned on the broadcast, Texas had 90 players visiting that game. Isn't that almost counterproductive? Because there's no way you can give love to that many players.
Yeah, I mean, kind of from a nerdy recruiting follower thing, my first thought was, that's a neutral game. Like, they can't – they're not giving facility tours, obviously. Like, that game is not in Austin. So that one was kind of like – for a neutral game, I'm not even sure if they're allowed to, like
– good point.
Give tickets to those kids, like, for free, like any home game you're allowed to do for those kids. So I think those kids bought their own tickets. Like, wow. That's just such a big game for kids in that region. 90 kids for, you know, at that, the Red River rivalry. Yeah, Notre Dame will have about that, I would say, for Notre Dame, USC. It won't be all of them, you know, 4 or 5-star level prospects, but sure. It's going to be a massive list of kids.
All right, Mike, you spent a little time in Vegas last week. I'm not sure how much you can tell us about what went into going to Vegas, but what was your takeaway from going out there?
Yeah, a wise man once said, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So Darren, even though I told you to ask me about this trip, I'm not able to talk about it. So okay. We're just going to have to go to the next question. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I'll stay off the personal side of my time in Vegas. But it was a really good trip. Took my wife out there and saw some buddies out there that I've known for a while that are in Vegas. So Bishop Gorman, obviously the top high school in that area. Nico Fertitta, former Notre Dame safety and special teamer, is the safeties coach at Bishop Gorman. So got to spend a little bit of time with Nico, which was a lot of fun. And one of his players, a cornerback for Bishop Gorman, Justin Rhett, top 50 corner recruit in the 2023 class. I would say Notre Dame's the leader right now. I've got a prediction in for him to go to Notre Dame. Tons of other schools after him: Alabama, LSU, Oregon, USC. List goes on and on. Big corner, about 6 foot 190 pounds, junior in high school. Darren, 190 pounds, 6'1" corner, and moves extremely well. So it's one of the most impressive facilities that I've seen at the high school level, Bishop Gorman. I mean, from the locker room to the weight room, to the theater style meeting room, very impressive high school. Amazing backdrop with the mountains. It was quite a treat. And seeing Justin Rhett, who very well may end up on Notre Dame's commitment list for the 2023 class, was a treat.
How far is the campus from the Strip?
It was about 15 or 20 minutes. Okay. It was a nice drive. Yeah, I mean, when I went in to this trip, Darren, to be honest with you, I had no expectations. All I knew about Vegas was crazy stuff happens there and that there's the Strip. I didn't know about all the mountains. To me, Vegas isn't known for mountains. That was incredible. The highlight for me was the Taco Bell Cantina on the Strip. That was amazing as a Taco Bell connoisseur like myself, but great trip. I got to do some stuff off the Strip that the locals would do, and
nice.
Yeah, it was just a really good trip. Yeah, I'm pretty blessed to have this sweet job where I get to go to Vegas for work.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, let's talk about a Notre Dame commit of the week, a standout performance from last week.
Yeah, this is our new segment to end our show on Tuesdays. And love this, Darren. How about this? Amarion Walker, Notre Dame's receiver commit, who we talk about, I don't know, Darren, probably every other week as a recruit of interest, because he's been committed to Notre Dame since March. He's taken visits to Alabama, LSU, and Michigan. Side note, I think he might stick with Notre Dame after so many people have been forecasting for him to flip to Michigan. In a 56-14 win this past Friday, caught three passes for 110 yards and three touchdowns. Now, on the season through five games, just 11 receptions, but five touchdowns on those receptions for 199 yards. So, big play machine. Half the time he catches the football, he's going for a touchdown. And again, three receptions for 110 yards and three touchdowns. That's Amarion Walker, 6'3", 170-pound, three-star receiver. But he is committed to playing in the Under Armour All-America game and committed to Notre Dame. But where he will end up signing is a different discussion. But again, feeling good about where the Irish stand with him.
Mike, let me ask just a wild card question, if you don't mind. This is
bring
off
it
the
on.
Top of your head.
Bring it on, Darren.
With LSU changing directions at head coach, Ed Orgeron will be gone at the end of the year. Is that going to affect any player Notre Dame might be interested in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Walker is one. Here's the thing. Chaos is good, right, for Notre Dame against LSU, but they're just going to bring in a new coach. I mean, what if they go get Joe Brady? So you got Amarion Walker. What about the Walker Howard kid, the 2022 five-star quarterback who Notre Dame almost hosted for the Cincinnati game, but he broke his leg the night before, so he didn't end up making the trip? Like, Notre Dame may not take a second quarterback in 2022, but if they do, they would certainly love for it to be Walker Howard to go along with Steve Angeli. Howard's dad, Jamie, played at LSU. I mean, he's been committed there for over a year. I mean, Ed O being out kind of creates a little bit of chaos where I think it's more likely that Howard takes a visit to Notre Dame, potentially even this weekend, Darren. But then you just hire a new coach who kind of galvanizes the university, galvanizes the recruiting class, where it might actually hurt Notre Dame in the end for some of these recruits when there's that new energy. Because that new coach, he's not going to be on the hot seat. Like, people might have been negative recruiting against LSU, saying, hey, Ed O's on the hot seat, you don't want to go there. Well, now this new coach has a long leash, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Always a lot of drama surrounding college football recruiting. That's Mike Singer. Check him out, Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. 7 minutes in front of 8 o'clock, I'm Darren Pritchett. This is Sports Beat AM from Sports Radio 960 WSBT. 7:58 at Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Don't miss your chance to get two $25 gift certificates for just $25 to Beef O'Brady's of Granger this Friday morning at 8:30. You can visit restaurantoftheweek.com for your chance to take advantage of this half-off offer before they're gone. Beef O'Brady's, open daily for lunch or dinner, and the home of Burger Mondays, Taco Tuesdays, Wing Wednesdays, Fajita Thursday, and Surf and Turf Fridays. Good food, good sports. It's Beef O'Brady's of Granger, this week's Restaurant of the Week, located at the corner of State Road 23 and Bittersweet. And don't miss your chance to get two $25 gift certificates for just $25 to Beef O'Brady's tomorrow morning. Actually, excuse me, this morning in about 30 minutes at 8:30.
Leading off the 8 a.m. hour on Sports Beat AM.
Don't you guys go anywhere. Plan to put on a hitting display.
The center fielder.
That boy's good.
Number nine.
Nine times.
A Midwest League champion.
Adios! Walk-off home run, Eloy Jimenez.
Who prefers to cheer for the birds on a bat.
Adios! Goodbye, and maybe that's a winner.
Here's Darren Pritchett.
A pleasant good morning, everyone. Hour number three, Sports Beat AM on WSBT Radio, brought to you by Mimo's Pizza on Edison in Mishawaka, the best pizza in the state. Manja Manja, Midland Engineering Company, completing their first century of quality roofing experience. And by Barnaby's of Mishawaka and Granger, serving Michiana's most favorite pizza for both dine-in and carry-out. Well, the Irish and the Trojans, preparations almost done for the matchup tomorrow night at Notre Dame Stadium. 7:30 kickoff on WSBT Radio. USC will be flying into the Midwest today. And welcome to a brisk fall day in South Bend to the Trojans. Right now, 36 degrees in downtown South Bend. USC, a 3-3 football team. Clay Helton fired after game two. Dante Williams is the interim head coach. A lot of talent, not the results they're looking for as of right now. RJ Abadia covers USC football for USCfootball.com. That is a part of the 24/7 sports family. And he joined my colleague Sean Stiers for a sit down to offer a little insight on this 3-3 USC football team.
Good to talk to you once again. And, you know, it's as far as these two old rivals, it's been a couple of years since Notre Dame and USC, of course, have played, since they didn't get to play due to the pandemic last year. Are Trojan fans, are they pretty fired up about the chance to see and play Notre Dame this weekend?
I think they're about as fired up as they can be during a season that I think has been an unquestioned disappointment and a little bit too dramatic off the field for I think any of their liking. I mean,
right.
This game speaks for itself. I mean, cliche, throw the records out, blah, blah, blah. You don't need to really explain to anybody why you should want to watch this game regardless. But I think even given all that, I think that enthusiasm might be just a little bit tempered because I think the expectations are just not really high for USC right now.
Let's go back to the decision to fire Clay Helton. It was just 2 weeks into the season, of course, you know, after USC had lost at home to Stanford. What did you think of the timing of the whole thing to do it after 2 weeks?
I mean, look, in a real sense, there's never a categorically good time to do that. But given that reality, there's probably not a worse time to do it than when USC did it, simply because, you know, the interim coach, it's not like he's only got to hold the fort for three or four more weeks and just get to the end of a season.
Exactly.
You know, Dante Williams came on and he's got to hold things together for 10 games. And it obviously begs the question of, you know, you gave him only two games. You know, what did you know about him two games in that you didn't know before training camp started,
yeah,
that you didn't know
thought.
In the spring? You know, it's just not it. Look, the presumption, cynical as it is that when you hire a new athletic director, you are hiring him to make a football hire at some point, you know, unless he comes on in the midst of some super successful tenured guy. So, you know, Mike Bone, who has been here for, you know, a couple years. And, you know, you have to think that the process was at some point they were going to have to move on from Clay Helton. Everybody kind of knew it. The writing was just graffitied on the walls at this point. And so given all of that, it was very peculiar timing. And it's kind of hard to argue that it has worked out very well for USC within the context of this season.
Well, Brian Kelly was asked this week, have they been a better team since they gave the interim title to Dante Williams? What do you think?
I think it's kind of hard to argue that they have. I mean, they were blown out by Stanford and Helton was relieved of his duties. And since then they've gone on the road and beaten a mediocre to decent Washington State team. They've got a winning record in a conference. And just a categorically terrible Colorado team on the road and at the Coliseum, they have been blown off the field by Oregon State and Utah in historic wins. Utah had not won since the Wilson administration in the Coliseum.
Wow.
And Oregon State had not won. I'm not even giving the years out. You Notre Dame guys are smart. You got to be educated. You're going to have to figure out the year. But Oregon State had not won since the Kennedy administration. So, you know, I mean, that has all happened since Williams took over. And to be honest with you, as I said, it's a tough chore to be handed this job under these circumstances. So to be honest with you, I don't know that those results are any different whether Clay Helton's there or not.
Well, I'm curious. This isn't necessarily about USC, but just real quick, the state of the Pac-12 right now, because I think that probably we're seven into the season, and I think maybe four different teams have made a case at one point or another as the best team in the conference. Who do you think is the best team in the Pac-12 right now?
That's a let's just call it a fluid reality.
Okay, so that's kind of what I was thinking.
because look, I mean, I think everybody was on the Oregon bandwagon.
Sure.
After they beat Ohio State on the road. I think it kind of remains to be seen how quality a win that was, but that's still a pretty solid win, you would think. But they have gone on to struggle in games since then. And they've got quarterback issues, and it's kind of tough to back a team with quarterback issues.
Yeah.
Until last week, Arizona State had kind of seized the day by beating UCLA, getting on a little bit of a roll themselves, looking strong, and then Utah just punched them in the mouth last Saturday. So I don't know that there's an answer. And look, that the Pac-12 glass full interpretation is, wow, look, we've got a truly competitive conference where everyone can beat everybody. And yeah, that's absolutely true. You have to say that. But the half empty is, you know, they've basically cannibalized themselves into irrelevance before the season's halfway over. If you're talking about the playoff or even, you know, New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, I think the real reality is they would like a team to be dominant so that they could get back, you know, so they could get into the college football playoff. But that appears like maybe another year away from happening already at this point. So RJ Abatia with us from USCFootball.com. Speaking of quarterbacks, Keaton Slovis, his third year now as a starter for the Trojans. He looks just kind of from the outside looking in like a guy kind of stuck and idle a little bit. 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, completing 64% of his passes. How do you evaluate Slovis' play so far?
I think idle is a fair way to describe it. I think on the list of USC's problems, he is not very high up.
Okay.
But I think when you're talking about a guy who came in with, you know, Heisman hype, all-conference hype, he's definitely not meeting those benchmarks. And, you know, part of it was he got hurt in the Washington State game. Freshman quarterback Jackson Dart came in and helped lead them to a win. That got everybody excited about Jackson Dart. Then Jackson Dart was revealed to be hurt in that game. And Slovis kind of has come back. He delivered in the win against Colorado. But, again, he was not part of the problem, I think, to a large extent against Utah and Oregon State. But he also wasn't part of the solution either. And I think, again, that idling is a good way to describe it. I mean, his completion percentage is down 64% from a career of 69. So that's, you know, that's 1 or 2 completions a game that's off the mark. But his yards per attempt are down almost 2 yards down from what it was his freshman year. So it's really hard to argue that he has progressed significantly. And this USC passing game is putting up semi-respectable numbers, but I think like the USC offense on a whole, what's killing them is they're just not finishing drives.
So, you know, you kind of led me into my next part of that then, because it doesn't matter who's in charge or how good they are. It seems like USC always has like that NFL caliber wide receiver, and it's Drake London this year. 64 catches, over 800 yards. What makes Drake London so good?
You know, Graham Harrell has been asked that question almost weekly, and his answer is some version of everything, and that's not far off.
Okay.
He is big. He is polished in terms of route running, breaks, understanding the subtleties of the game. His ball skills are unbelievable. You know, 50-50 balls are not 50-50 balls when Drake London's involved. I don't think he's got blinding NFL speed, but he's certainly got enough speed that, you know, if you hesitate, you've lost him. And so, yeah, he has been fantastic. And that's even before you factor in the fact that he is getting double and even occasionally triple teamed, you know, on an every snap basis. You know, he is a legit problem. There's just no other way to slice it. And like I said, like, you can do your job against him and still give up the completion, you know, which I think kind of wears on you if you're a cornerback over the course of a game when you're kind of where you need to be, and it kind of just doesn't matter, you know. So he has been everything that he was expected to be.
So I think what everyone, you know, the from a Notre Dame perspective wants to know is, how did Stanford hold him to four catches and 68 yards, which is just well below anything that he is averaging this year?
I mean, that game is going to probably be the entirety of Caillou Blue Kelly's draft film, to be honest with you. Like, because, yeah, it is a clear outlier. I mean, Stanford, I don't think Stanford did anything really magical against him, but they just had some guys who played really well. And, you know, that game was just a weird game for USC in a sense. I think they got down in a way they didn't expect to get down. And, it changes. You know, the thing, the final scores of these USC losses don't look as bad as the way they've played out. I mean, USC has been down 4 and 5 scores at points in these games, you know. And when you get into that situation, you know, those are possession after possession where the defenses are getting their ears back. They can pass rush with no fear. And the coverages can be as, you know, complicated and involve as many guys as you want, because you're not stressed out about getting beat in the run game.
Yeah. RJ Abatey is with us from USCFootball.com. Now there's another Drake Jackson, outside linebacker, their leading sack guy, maybe their best defensive player. He was injured a couple of weeks ago against Utah. What's his status for this week right now?
So USC had a bye week, so we haven't had an update on Drake Jackson in a week. We'll have one today from okay. Dante Williams, but the expectation as of right now is I would expect him to be there and be playing. Like I said, that is literally just a couple hours away from being updated. Sadly, I don't think not even you and I could vamp for that long. So I don't think I'm going to be able to.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of start to put a wrap on it with this. You know, you mentioned that Keaton Slovis was not close to being on USC's list of problems this year. And obviously, putting the coaching thing aside, because when you fire your coach in week two, that's obviously going to be a problem. But if you could maybe kind of hit one or two of the top problems on each side of the ball that they have, that you would say is predominant so far, what would they be?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of gave it away on offense. It's really just the red zone for okay. the offense. I mean, they are 53rd in the country in red zone trips. So that's better than half, right? Better than average. So they're moving the ball at a respectable clip, even if it's not an elite clip. But they just are not scoring. They have a 57% touchdown percentage in the red zone. That's 86th in the country. And it has cost them. You know, it has cost them in the Stanford game and the Utah game. And that ended in opponent's territory and did not end in touchdowns. And when you're struggling on defense, that is a problem. And that kind of leads me to the other side of the ball, which, you know, I think the biggest surprise in terms of USC struggling this year has been their defense. I think this was a secondary that was expected to be amongst the best. And then their run defense, the defensive line, was expected to be a solid part of this team. And they are 85th in rush defense in terms of yards per carry allowed. So the defense has underachieved, and there were a couple injuries in spring. They lost Brandon Peely, who was a big part of their interior defensive line plans. They lost Jay Toya, who transferred to UCLA your spring ball, and he was going to be a rotation guy for them. So they've kind of been lacking that interior defensive tackle nose guard presence, and it's kind of opened up the door to all the other kinds of problems, because you struggle with the run game if you don't have that. It's a little bit harder to get a pass rush if you don't have that. And then if you're not getting the pass rush, you've got defensive backs in one-on-one situations, and they can't hold on forever. So I think those are the big glaring things that have kind of bitten USC. And I think from a talent standpoint, certainly, I think you can argue they've underachieved just relative to what they have.
Right. RJ Abadia, USCFootball.com. Hey, RJ, appreciate it as always. Sounds like you're plenty busy out there getting ready to find out some more USC information. So appreciate your time as always, and look forward to talking to you again sometime.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Have a great one.
All right.
Again, RJ Abadia. Check out more on the Trojans, uscfootball.com, a part of the 24/7 sports family. 824. I'm Darren Pritchett. This is Sports Beat AM on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. 23 minutes in front of 9 o'clock, our day before game day Sports Beat AM program on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 960 WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett, joined by Patrick Engel, Notre Dame writer for Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. I think we're all looking forward to the second half of the Notre Dame football season. And as the second half unfolds, we're going to be mixing in some Fighting Irish basketball on the way. And Patrick will be covering Mike Bray's Fighting Irish this year as well for Blue and Gold Illustrated. But we'll stick to football talk this morning, Patrick, as the Irish get set to take on USC. I asked your colleague Tyler Horka this question earlier in the week, so let me throw it your way. Six games left on the Irish schedule. I think it's fair to say, sitting here right now, Notre Dame will be the favorite in all six games. Which game do you believe will be the most difficult for the Irish?
You know, it's interesting when you look at this final six, where it's all teams that are currently unranked and that I would think are going to stay that way when we see the final committee rankings come out in the first weekend of December. So when you look at that, it's kind of hard to pinpoint a loss of like, oh yeah, this game is where you think it can happen, or is like where everyone is kind of agreeing it could happen. That's not really the case here. Even though I think they're going to go 5-1 over this final stretch, finish 10-2 and take a loss somewhere. If I had to pick it now, I think it would be at Virginia. And either way, if it's there or if it's North Carolina, I don't think they're going to lose to USC this weekend. It feels like it'd be kind of a game where you get in a shootout against an offense that can really test you and through the air, like Virginia's can, and even like North Carolina's can. But Virginia in particular, you look at their quarterback, Brennan Armstrong. He's throwing it in the upper 40s per game, top three nationally in passing yards per game. And they have a receiver in Dontavian Wicks who's averaging over 20 yards a catch, top 15 nationally in yards per game as well. And someone who I think is, all right, if you look at Notre Dame's secondary, that a couple times this year has been kind of poked down the field, this is probably the team that's best set up to do that. I know North Carolina in their explosive passing offense is, well, explosive, but a lot of what they do is kind of shorter and intermediate routes and trying to run after the catch. And I think we've seen Notre Dame handle that pretty well in most games earlier this year. So if I had to pick one, it'd be Virginia. But then again, you look at Virginia's defense, it's not particularly stout, and you can see Notre Dame winning a shootout or getting into the high 30s, but winning by 10 or something because their own defense comes up with a couple of takeaways late. So I'm going to go with that one there. But like I said, I think it's kind of hard to exactly pinpoint where it happens. And I look at more of the reason why I think they're going to take a loss somewhere, just because of all the things we don't really know how they're going to unfold on offense, and the kind of unsustainable feeling of the lack of stability at quarterback can kind of cost you against any team. But if you had to make me pick, I'd say the toughest one is Virginia.
I think that's a great choice. Boy, Virginia's had a weird year. You mentioned that Carolina game. They almost gave up 700 yards of total offense, and now they bounce back. They had a 48-0 shutout victory over Duke last weekend. So Virginia, up and down football team, but they're as good as anybody right now on the schedule with a record of 5-2. Let me get your takeaway from the Virginia Tech game, Patrick. The Irish were able to run the football. They ran for 180 yards, 4.2 yards per carry. When you factor in Buckner, some changes along the offensive line, do you believe this is the start of the running game starting to turn the corner? I'm not expecting them to dwarf into what we saw last year, but we all agree if the running game can get going a little bit, it's going to take a lot of pressure off Notre Dame's quarterbacks.
Absolutely. And I don't want to go on one game and kind of trumpet the arrival of even just, you know, steady running game, but this is something that you wanted to see. And Virginia Tech's defense is by no means a pushover of a unit against the run, and with as far as getting sacks. So the fact that Notre Dame was able to only allow 2 sacks and didn't allow a tackle for loss outside of those sacks I thought was a really good development. And those offensive line changes, like you mentioned, we're going to see that going forward with Joe Alt continuing to start at left tackle. Andrew Krustofik's going to get the start at left guard this week. And it, I think just kind of you feel good that, all right, this is something that looked good over an entire game, that at least it's something to go forward with. And if it doesn't work, well, that's the case. But this kind of continuity and feeling like there might be something that works hasn't really been a thing that we've looked at and been able to feel with Notre Dame's offensive line in the prior games before that. So a good start. And yes, I don't want to, again, say that this is, you know, what to expect going forward based off just one game, but this is what a at least dependable rushing offense would do in that situation. And again, we'll see if, in fact, Notre Dame proves to be dependable. This is a friendly matchup against USC, who's struggled defending the run and, well, struggled defending in the air too. So if Notre Dame's able to come out and handle that matchup, again, like a good rushing attack could, I think we'll feel pretty good about what that can do going forward, even if this isn't something where it's, you know, bludgeoning opponents like last year, but just enough of a consistent source of yards that's not getting constantly behind the change, and that you can count on to get ahead of the chains on first down and get successful runs, and then that you can count on as a short yardage weapon more than Notre Dame did running the ball in short yardage in the first five games.
Sports Beat AM on WSBT Radio. I'm Darren Pritchett, joined by Patrick Engel, Notre Dame football writer at Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. Patrick, if Chris Tyree can't go tomorrow, the Irish running back, number two on the depth chart, banged up against Virginia Tech, Brian Kelly says he's not 100% at this time. He'll be a game-time decision. If Tyree doesn't go, how comfortable are you with the backups behind Kyren Williams?
I think you'd have to feel pretty good with Sebo Flemister and Logan Diggs. Flemister being a senior who's been in that rotation the last 2 years, even if he's been unavailable for most of the season. But you feel pretty good about what he's been able to bring before, and that, all right, whether he's in number two or number three, there's, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a situation that completely makes you unable to run the ball. And then Logan Diggs' debut at Virginia Tech, his college debut, that is, I thought was intriguing, where he looked comfortable running the ball and seeing things, caught a pass, actually split out of the backfield on a little angle route, and then held his own in a couple times he was asked to be a pass protector. So a good kind of well-rounded small sample debut there for Diggs, seven touches, I believe it was. So I think we'll see both, but you're intrigued by what the freshman gave you there. And you know, I'm kind of curious to see just how much work he gets, because I'm thinking someone who's definitely going to be involved next year should Kyren Williams head to the NFL.
So, Patrick, your best guess, which team plays the most quarterbacks tomorrow?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's, you know, you have Notre Dame with, you know, there's absolutely no certainty in trying to project what's going to happen there if you use the first six games as an example. But then USC in the same kind of situation, where I believe it was in practice this week, their interim head coach, Dante Williams, didn't come straight out and say that Keaton Slovis is the starter over Jackson Dart. So kind of an odd development there, even if Slovis being a guy who started since his freshman year 2 years ago and could find himself as a draft pick this spring. But yeah, I'm going to go with Notre Dame because I feel very, very certain that they're going to play two with Jack Cohn and Tyler Buchner. Whereas USC, I don't really know what they gain by trying to rotate those two guys, where I imagine ultimately it'll be one of them who comes out there and plays the entire game, unless it's just a complete misadventure, which I don't think it would be in either case, or one of them gets hurt.
Hmm. What type of challenge does the Irish secondary have tomorrow, Patrick, when you think about the matchup against wide receiver Logan Drake? 64 catches through six games. Four of the six games, he has had 10 catches. A fifth game, he had 9 catches against Colorado.
Yeah, Drake London's probably the best receiver they're going to play all year, if you ask me. A guy who's got 13 catches on passes that travel at least 20 yards downfield. And so that's more than two per game. So it's been really hard to deny him there. He's gotten over 100 yards and 9 catches in all but one game. Interestingly, that one exception came against Stanford, not exactly known for its stout defense this year. So it's going to be a big challenge, where you're going to have to be able to prevent the looks downfield. And they're still going to throw him some passes at shorter range that are going to allow him to run after the catch, and Notre Dame's going to need to tackle. I thought that area is where they did a really good job on David Bell against Purdue a few weeks ago, who's not too far behind Drake London on the national leaderboards in a lot of receiving categories, but Notre Dame held him to under 10 yards per catch by keeping everything in front and being able to wrap him up and only let him get down the field free once for a 32-yarder. So I think you can live with Notre Dame, if you're Notre Dame, London getting 8 to 10 catches if all but one of those is within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage that doesn't get broken for 20-something yards after the catch if you're able to wrap him up. But yes, a big, big challenge for being able to stick with him down the field for Cam Hart, for Clarence Lewis. I imagine both are going to see him a little bit. And, you know, we saw Notre Dame last time they played USC in this, you know, spread it out, air raid type of offense, really did a good job of trying to double and play a guy over the top and take away Michael Pittman 2 years ago. I think I'm wondering if we might see a lot of the same or a similar kind of idea with Drake London here. And we've seen Notre Dame play some dime on third downs and a lot of nickel. I'm wondering if we see some more dime usage in this game, or we even see, like they did 2 years ago, more of a nickel base, just trying to keep him as limited as possible.
Yeah, thanks for correcting me. Drake Logan's an old baseball player I knew. I've wanted to get that name out of my head all week. Drake London is the outstanding wide receiver for USC. Finally, Patrick, what type of game do you believe will unfold at Notre Dame Stadium tomorrow night? Do you feel like the offenses will have the final say in this game? Maybe a surprising defensive struggle will take place.
So I have this as Notre Dame 31, USC 23. I believe I've seen the over-under at 57.5, and that score would be an under. And you look at that, and that's 54 points?
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, okay, you know, defensive struggle-ish or defensive neutral, I'd put it. I'm not sure it's going to unfold like that. I feel like, you know, USC, you feel very good about holding them to 23 points. And if that's the case, I think Notre Dame absolutely wins the game. But I'm kind of thinking that might come with, you know, a decent amount of yards or a good yards per play figure, but that Notre Dame gets a takeaway in the red zone or stops a drive late with a fourth down stop or another interception. I think that Notre Dame's going to get two interceptions in this game, or at least two takeaways. And I think we'll see at least one of those take points away from USC when they're on the cusp of scoring. And that's going to keep the point total down, even if USC is able to get past Notre Dame's 40-yard line, say, 5, 6, 7 times. I think we'll see that because it's been hard to completely shut down their offense, and their running game isn't absent either, even though you know them best for Keaton Slovis and Drake London being their best offensive player. But I think Notre Dame's going to be able to move the ball, and I'm not sure exactly, again, fool's errand to try to predict what unfolds at quarterback, but whatever it is there, if Jack Cohn is at all like what we saw against Virginia Tech in the fourth quarter, or even at all like what we saw against him from Florida State when he played there in that opener and threw for 350 yards, and if Tyler Buckner is just a good change of pace, I feel pretty good about Notre Dame being able to get past 30 points.
Patrick, today, of course, a lot of information on Notre Dame USC at blueandgold.com. It's a game day tomorrow. Offer some insight what Irish fans will find today and tomorrow at blueandgold.com.
Yeah, as usual, I've got my Friday morning column up. We'll have our full 56-page issue out on Sunday morning, a print edition of Blue and Gold Illustrated, as well as a lot of that same stuff showing up on the web Saturday night, deep into Saturday night and into Sunday morning. And of course, my colleague, our recruiting reporter at Blue and Gold, Mike Singer, been all over the big recruiting weekend and an impressive visitors list of recruits coming in for this game, including five-star LSU quarterback commit Walker Howard. So head over to blueandgold.com and check out his recruiting coverage for what could be a big weekend as Notre Dame looks to wrap up this 2022 class and make a move on some 2023 guys.
All right, Patrick has the Irish winning 31-23. I've got the Irish winning 35-24, so we're in the same ballpark. Patrick, great to catch up with you. We'll see you at Notre Dame Stadium tomorrow. Thanks for your time, as always.
Thank you, Darren. Appreciate it, as always.